All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 501 for Thursday, November the 10th, 1969. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and drinking to accept that my job has more to do with Excel than Kali Linux. This is the last show we're going to do this year. We're going to take hiatus after this one for holidays and... I don't know about you guys, but the news stories have just been kind of shit the past couple of days.
What do you expect, man?
It's all election and Twitter, and really neither one of them is particularly pertinent to what we want to talk about.
Exactly.
So, we have a madman. What is up, madman?
A drink to aid the friction between departments.
Yeah, that sounds about right, too, doesn't it? And we have an RU.
A drink to keep the COVID out. Because apparently it's back, baby.
Oh, yeah, you were telling us about that. Anytime the government feels threatened.
right.
So. Anyways, I guess, I know last week we were talking about maybe trying to shake up the format of the show a little bit, find something new. I still haven't figured out what that actually means. So, I want to figure out something to do.
It means switching from bourbon to rum.
Ah. But,
you thought it was going to benefit the listeners, did you? Fuck them. It benefits me.
Well, I got to figure some shit out and what we want to do because I don't know. I want it to be more unique than it is, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping with my new show next year. I hope it'll be interesting.
And maybe we'll if your show is more fun, we may just just leave decking and transition into yours. So we'll see.
Well, we can still do the digital stuff. Yeah, my show doesn't rule anything out, man.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
I mean, if we want to do decking style stories, we can.
We'll
figure
it out.
Want to do puppy chuckers, man? We can.
We'll figure it out, but I need to. We've been doing this for a long ass time. I think it's time to retool. You know what I mean? So,
dude, if I have to hear the word toolbox one more fucking time in relation to solving problems, I'm going to kill myself.
Okay, I will come up with a different euphemism. But in the meantime, I guess we can just do the news stories here. So I got two on FTX. So we'll start with the big one. It's from CNBC. Binance is backing out of its plans to acquire FTX, the company said Wednesday, leaving Sam Bankman's fried crypto empire on the verge of collapse. The reversal comes one day after Binance CEO Xianping Zhao announced that the world's largest cryptocurrency firm had reached a non-binding deal to buy FTX's non-U.S. businesses for an undisclosed amount, rescuing the company from a liquidity crisis. Earlier this year, FTX was valued at $32 billion by private investors. Quote, "In the beginning, our hope was to be able to support FTX's customers to provide liquidity," unquote. Binance said in a tweet Wednesday, quote, "but the issues are beyond our ability to help," unquote. In other words, Binance is saying they owe more money than we have. We don't want to have anything to do with this. On Monday night, facing a liquidity crunch, Bankman-Fried was scrambling to raise money from venture capitalists and other investors before he went to Binance. According to sources with knowledge of the matter, Zhao initially agreed to step in, but his company quickly changed course, citing reports of mishandled customer funds and alleged U.S. Agency investigations. In other words, they're like, yeah, sure.
There's something criminal here? I'm not touching this with a 30-foot pole.
So they got a look at the books and went, oh, God, no.
Oh, you're under FBI investigation and IRS? Fuck that.
It's like, well, let me just make a point and... Well, that didn't play right.
But shut up, Wesley.
There you go. I'm sure that's what the entire meeting was. But, sir, can we just...
But shut up, Wesley.
But I really want to...
But shut up, Wesley.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. They saw the books, and that was the end of the conversation.
Uh-huh, right. You know, I get our accountant to look at... Don't jump. Don't jump, Dim.
It's like, we call this a suck fund. Turn that tape off! Name that reference if you know it. It's unclear who is next in line to buy the beleaguered crypto exchange. Bankman-Fried told investors that the company is facing a shortfall of up to $8 billion from withdrawal requests and needs emergency funding, according to a person familiar with the matter. The disintegration of the Binance FTX deal is the largest latest chapter in a shocking collapse that rocked the crypto world this week. Bankman-Fried tried to reassure investors just on Monday that the company's assets were fine. But after Binance's Zhao said publicly that his company was selling its holdings in FTX's native token FTT, the sell-off was on and FTX could do nothing to stop it. One of Silicon Valley's most prominent VC firms, Sequoia Capital, sank $210 million into the company, according to independent reporter Eric Newcomer. FTX was telling investors recently that its operating income in 2022 was projected to drop... to $144 million this year, down from $338 million in 2021, while revenue was projected to rise $1.1 billion from $1 billion last year, Newcomer reports. Bankman-Fried said Tuesday that customers had demanded withdrawals to the tune of $6 billion. He also deleted tweets from the prior day indicating that FTX had enough assets to cover clients' holdings. In other words, Exhibit A and Exhibit B. Zhao told Binance employees in a memo earlier Wednesday that he, quote, did not master plan, unquote, the collapse of FTX. He said FTX going down, quote, is not good for anyone in the industry, unquote, and employees should not view it as a win for us. He also told them not to trade FTT tokens while this ordeal unfolds. If you have a bag, you have a bag, he wrote. Do not buy or sell. Okay. The reason he's giving them that advice... is he has seen the investigations, i.e. if you are trading FTX, he's worried about his people getting caught in insider trading. That's why he's saying that.
Deal.
FTT has already lost 80% of its value between Monday and Tuesday, falling to $5 and wiping out more than $2 billion in a day. You know, I hate it when they say this stuff. It's like, oh, this coin is now, you know, lost value and it's wiped out all this money. Well...
It wasn't worth it to start with.
It wiped out potential money. You know, it's not that that money was ever realized.
Yeah, it depends on what you bought the coin at as to whether or not you lost money.
To me, it's a bit weird because it's like that money was never actualized. It was never there. But you're saying, oh, we wiped out all this value. Well, it's kind of like a spring, right? You think... You know, you compress it and you think it's going to have so much energy in it when you release it. But until you release it, you don't actually know. Well, that's the point, you can measure a spring and know what their rating is.
Canadian Teachers Association is saying they've lost $95 million in their pensions.
From this?
Yeah, they had their pension funds in crypto.
Oh, that's a bad idea. Who thought that was a good idea?
Canadian Teachers fucking union.
I would question Canadian education then.
Unions, you know, always looking out for the little guy, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Cryptocurrencies have plummeted amid the deal turmoil, with Bitcoin falling 15% on Wednesday after a 13% drop on Tuesday. It's trading below $16,000 for the first time since November 2020.
It's been heading south all year, man.
I know, but I didn't realize it was that far down.
I mean, if you got your money in Doge, you're sitting pretty, man. You haven't lost that much now. Doge is coming back.
Yeah.
Well, it's not coming back. It's just a little more stable.
Which is funny because Doge was the joke currency. It turns out to be the best of any of them.
Well, I have no skin in the game when it comes to crypto. I just check the price every Thursday night when we do the show. Before we do the show, I check the prices, have a look how they did over the week.
Well,
just to see.
I have a little bit of crypto, but it's play money. I've been treating it like casino tokens.
Yeah. So, well, that's all it is.
That, and I wanted to play with the technology and you know, play with what a hardware wallet was like. So, you know, you need a little bit of Bitcoin to mess with it. So, yeah. Ether, meanwhile, has plunged more than 30% over the past 2 days and is falling close to below 1,000. You know, if you think these things have a chance of coming back, this could be a buying opportunity. If you think that they're going to keep falling, then obviously you want to wait more. I haven't been following it close enough. I honestly have no fucking clue. But if FTX is truly going down, major exchanges always hurt the currency because it's always people dumping it out, yep, trying to get out of it. So this could actually cause another problem in that people might be rapidly trying to move their coins to other exchanges to dump them out. So I don't know. I honestly do not know enough about finance to, I mean, I can game theory it a bit in my head, but I might be breaking laws, especially with RU, if we tried to do that. So, because I'm wildly speculating. If anybody's taking my random musings as investment advice, best of luck. It's not intended as such. They have a statement here from FTX. This isn't from FTX, this is from Binance. Quote, as a result of corporate due diligence, as well as the latest news reports regarding mishandled customer funds and alleged U.S. agency investigations, we've decided that we will not pursue the potential acquisition of FTX.com. In the beginning, our hope was to be able to support FTX's customers to provide liquidity, but the issues are beyond our control or ability to help. Every time a major player in the industry fails, retail customers will suffer. We have seen this in the last several years that the crypto ecosystem is becoming more resilient, and we believe in time that outliers that misuse users' funds will be weeded out by the free market. As regulatory frameworks are developed and the industry continues to evolve towards greater decentralization, the ecosystem will grow stronger.
Talking up a big game there, champ.
So let's talk about these recent news articles about FTX, because it's a doozy. You know, I'm not a big fan of banking regulations, but that doesn't mean that the free market has to learn every lesson that were handled by banking regulations with experience. So this is from Wall Street Journal. FTX tapped into customer accounts to fund risky bets. This is why they're going out of business.
That's fraud.
What do I always say every time we talk about crypto? Don't
keep it in the exchange.
Do not keep your coins in the exchange. If you are not actively using them in the exchange, pull them back into your own private wallet. Crypto exchange FTX lent billions of dollars worth of customer assets to fund risky bets by its affiliated trading firm, Alameda Research, setting the stage for the exchange's implosion, a person familiar with the matter said. FTX chief executive Sam Bankman-Fried said in investor meetings this week that Alameda owes FTX about $10 billion. People familiar with the matter said FTX extended loans to Alameda using money that customers had deposited on the exchange for trading purposes, a decision that Mr. Bankman-Fried describes as a poor judgment call, one of the people said.
I could describe it so much better.
It's a poor judgment call.
Welcome to the rice fields.
I mean, it's just like,
yeah.
I mean, so they decided to stop acting as an exchange and act as a bank instead.
Yeah, but they decided to act as a bank without acting as a bank. Instead, they started acting as a pyramid scheme. Actually, no, I guess it'd be more of just a very poorly managed brokerage. But again, people didn't know that that's what they were putting their money into. They thought they were putting their money into a cryptocurrency exchange. So,
it's fraud by deception.
And affiliated trading firm. So the question becomes, is Alameda Research ran by the same people as FTX? Because if so, then I want to see some people go to jail. FTX chief executive Sam Bankman-Fried said in an investor meeting this week that Alameda owes FTX about $10 billion. People familiar with the matter said FTX extended loans to Alameda using money that customers deposited on exchange for trading. Oh, I already read this part. Okay. All in all, FTX has $16 billion in customer assets, the people said. So FTX lent more than half of its customer funds to its sister company, Alameda. Alameda took out additional loans from other financial firms, according to people familiar with the matter. As of Monday, Alameda owed $1.5 billion in loans to counterparties outside of FTX, the people said. So not only did they fucked up hard. An FTX spokesman declined to comment. Gee, you think? That's because anything they say will be used against them in a court of law.
You'd hope. The FTX, way this world works is people like that don't go to prison.
Oh, here's the worst part. FTX paused customer withdrawals earlier this week when it was hit with roughly $5 billion worth of withdrawal requests on Wednesday. In other words, they had a run.
Well, somebody got wind, I'll bet money, and posted it somewhere.
With the moment an exchange pauses withdrawals, everyone panics because that's, I mean, that's kind of it, right?
Yeah. You're guaranteed a run the minute someone figures out they're shaky.
Withdrawal requests on Sunday, according to a Thursday morning tweet from Mr. Bankman-Fried. The crisis forced FTX to scramble for an emergency investment. FTX struck a deal to sell itself to giant rival Binance on Tuesday, but Binance walked away from the deal the next day, saying FTX's problems were... Yeah, we've said that a couple of times. The Securities and Exchange Commission and the Justice Department are investigating FTX following its sudden implosion this week. You think? On Thursday, the Securities Commission of the Bahamas said that it froze the assets of FTX Digital Markets Limited, the Bahamas subsidiary of FTX. The commission said that it appointed a provisional liquidator and said that no assets held by the firm can be transferred without the provisional liquidator's approval, the commission said. The failure of FTX to withdraw or to fill withdrawal requests shocked crypto investors and badly tarnished the reputation of Mr. Bankman-Fried, who had embraced regulation of digital currencies and branded himself as a crypto entrepreneur driven by ethics and philanthropy. Okay. Now, quote, an exchange really shouldn't have problems getting its customers their deposits, unquote, said Francis Coppola, UK-based economist. Quote,
yeah, they shouldn't, but they do.
Yeah. Quote, it shouldn't be doing anything with those assets. They should literally be sitting there so people can use them, unquote. Yes, that is what everyone thought an exchange was.
That's what an exchange is. Just people thought FTX was an exchange and were wrong.
It was theft by deception.
Yeah, it absolutely is. As questions were brewing about FTX's health on Monday, Mr. Bankman-Fried tweeted, FTX has enough to cover all client holdings. We don't invest client assets, even in treasuries. He later deleted the tweet. Yeah, they're not investing it. They're loaning it to their other company that's investing it. On Thursday morning, Mr. Bankman-Fried said in a tweet that Alameda Research was winding down trading. So here's a question. Who owns Alameda Research? Because they keep calling it the sister company. But I'm just curious. Who owns Alameda Research? Sam Bankman-Fried. Yeah, he had his other company doing investments poorly. And so he started taking money from his crypto exchange to keep funding Alameda Research. And you know the thought process. Oh, I'll make it back. Now that this is going, yeah, I can make it back. And then no one will ever know. And it probably happens way more often than anyone would like to admit. And it does work, which is why you hear about it so badly when it doesn't. let's see. Thursday morning, Bankman-Fried. Yeah. In traditional markets, brokers must keep their client funds segregated from other company assets, and regulators can punish violations. In 2013, for instance, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission fined brokerage MF Global $100 million for misuse of customer funds during its messy collapse 2 years earlier, a downfall also driven by risky bets gone wrong. So this thing, they said $1.5 billion that this company's lost, right? and they're going to fine them $100 million. I mean, it's stupid.
Makes no sense.
We're talking about stupid amounts of money, but percentage wise, it's a slap on the wrist based on the crime.
Well, it means you can take the chance to pull a crime off, knowing that you're only going to have, you know, slap on the wrist.
But MF Global customers were ultimately made whole after a years-long bankruptcy process. Well, that's interesting, because normally the whole point of bankruptcy is you're not going to be making people whole. I guess if it's a restructure, not a Chapter 7.
It depends on how much is owed and how much assets the company has. By making people whole, they're... the corporate executives lost money.
Yeah. But with FTX operating in the wild west of crypto, it's unclear whether customers will ever get their money back. No, they won't. Because
they won't.
Even if they got their tokens back, the value of them is so diminished, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So... no, they will never get their money back. I can answer that right now. The revelation of the loans suggests that the root of FTX's downfall lay in its relationship with Alameda, a firm known for aggressive trading strategies funded by borrowed money.
You can be aggressive with other people's money. It's great.
On that one, on the previous comment, Morps, I'm not sure I would agree with you on it. If they lost, I don't know what digital currencies FTX trades in, but let's say 5 Bitcoin. If I give you back 5 Bitcoin, I've made you whole. Even if the current trading on that 5 Bitcoin has cut in half, because as you said earlier, when they said customers lost so many billions because of the drop in price, that's speculative.
That's true. No, that's true.
So if they can get back the whatever digital asset,
the commodity,
same amount
in this case, I think.
Then they've got they've made them whole.
Well, I think people were trying to actually sell it, and that's part of it too. Is they were actually trying to extract their cash. So, again, do not keep your coins on the exchange if you're not actively using them for trading. Let's see. Some crypto traders had voiced wariness of the affiliation, worrying that it posed a conflict of interest for an exchange to be attached to a trading business. Mr. Bankman-Fried founded and is the majority owner of both firms. He was the CEO of Alameda till last year when he stepped back to focus on FTX. Alameda's CEO is Caroline Ellison, a Stanford University graduate who, like Mr. Bankman-Fried, previously worked for a quantitative trading firm, Jane Street Capital. Alameda is based in Hong Kong, where FTX was headquartered before relocating to the Bahamas last year. And, of course, since the government of the Bahamas has basically seized the company and put an auditor in charge of it. So whether or not they ever get, you know what, they probably never even get their tokens back now, because it sounds like, you know, the Bahamas have kind of put one of their controllers in. So I don't know.
Well, the banking regulations down in the Bahamas are just so transparent too.
In theory, exchanges like FTX make money by allowing customers to trade cryptocurrency and collecting fees for the transactions. Alameda pursued a variety of trading strategies to make money from volatility, a riskier business model. Among strategies that Alameda exchanged in after Mr. Bankman-Fried founded the firm in 2017 was arbitrage, buying a coin in one location and selling it elsewhere for more. One early winning trade involved buying Bitcoin on U.S. exchanges and selling them in Japan, where it commanded a premium over its U.S. price. Another business in Alameda is market making, offering to buy and sell assets on crypto exchanges throughout the day and collecting a spread between the buying and selling price. So... more recently, Alameda became one of the biggest players in yield farming, or investing in tokens that pay interest rates like rewards, according to analysts who used public blockchain data to track the firm's activities. One crypto wallet controlled by Alameda generated more than $550 million in trading profit in 2020, according to blockchain analytics firm Nasnin. Yield farming can be risky because the tokens often have an initial run-up in price as investors pile in seeking the rewards and then crash as they get out. Quote, it's essentially like picking up pennies before a steamroller, said independent blockchain analyst Andrew Van Aken. Use dollars or stable coins to get these very speculative coins. And the problem is they've got a picture of this Bankman-Fried guy, and he looks exactly like his name sounds. And yeah, I you could totally envision this guy trying to pick up pennies in front of a steamroller. So. I mean, it's like RU said, this is a case of fraud. This isn't a failure of the crypto market. This isn't a failure of
greed.
The technology. This is a company playing around in a space that they're able to do fraud because that space isn't, I don't know why it wouldn't be. Why wouldn't this stuff be regulated like any other financial institution?
Question I've been asking since it kicked off.
Because, okay, you're trading a digital asset. Great. You're still a commodities broker. Why are you not?
Yeah.
Why are they not subject to the same regulations?
Well, because it's a question as to whether or not a digital asset, quote unquote, is an actual asset.
Yeah. Nothing really there.
Well, I mean,
now, once they're finally deemed an asset, they'll probably be regulated like any other exchange.
Well, why wouldn't they be deemed an asset? Their number's in a computer, just like your bank account.
Yeah, I suppose they don't hold more than 1% in the banks anymore.
I mean, nobody's stock. No, nobody's shipping the slips of paper around for, you know, sales of stock these days. It's all digital in an account.
It's digital in an account, but it's actually referencing ownership of a brick and mortar company.
Yes, it is.
And a percentage of that company's profits. A Bitcoin guarantees you nothing. It's not ownership in anything. It's not a currency. It doesn't have any inherent value. Okay, it is a currency. It's not money. It has no inherent value like money would have. And unlike currencies issued by countries, it has no faith and credit backing it. That's why it's not considered an asset traditionally. Same thing with everything else they throw digital in front of as far as assets, like an FTF or the token things they're making right now. It's
a series of numbers in a computer. Yeah.
It's a series of numbers in a computer. Like money traditionally would be gold. When we went to a fiat currency, it's, well, the government has guns and will back up its credit. There's neither of those things when it comes to a quote unquote digital asset. That's why calling it an asset is a misnomer. It has no more value than a poker chip at a casino. The reason you think it has value is that casino actually has dollars, usually, if it's well run. Otherwise, it's a piece of plastic. Now, if we're going with an asset on a normal exchange, let's say any of the commodities futures, a bushel of corn might not be worth the $5 I paid for it, but a bushel of corn is still worth something. Same thing with a ton of iron or any other exchange.
It still actually translates to, you know, some good. So you could, I mean, worst case, you could take physical possession of it and do something with it. Sure. You could take not physical, but you could take possession of your Bitcoin. It's what I always say to do is keep your wallet and, you know, keep your Bitcoins in a wallet you control. The difference there is that there's not any immediate value to the Bitcoin. It's simply entries in a ledger showing that this wallet is holding so much of the token. The only reason it has value is because everyone agrees that it has value of some sort. So, although admittedly, that's kind of the same for... Well, no, it's not. I was going to say it's kind of the same for any of the precious metals they used to trade just as a store of value, like using gold as money. But gold coins have a, you know, okay, they have you can use gold for other things. You could melt the coins down and actually use them, even if no one was treating them as currency anymore. Because gold-plated contacts are totally a thing in electronics. So, in fact, gold is quite useful in manufacturing of electronics. So,
well, every airbag in every car has a gold contact.
Mm-hmm. I talked to some guys who
add up the airbags, man.
they used to scrap electronics simply to get the gold off the pins.
Yeah, I did that.
These guys apparently were using quite the chemical process to do it. That when I looked up those chemicals they were using, it was like, oh my god, no.
Yeah, they're called carcinogens.
Yeah, you want industrial rubber gloves and an outdoor setting. I'm telling you, the sizzle is real. Yeah, outdoors, man. I would not do that shit indoors.
So this was in a plastics manufacturing plant that I met these guys. And let's just say they looked like they did not use the safety equipment when it came to using these chemicals. So had about that many teeth.
I mean, it's an interesting process, but you're not going to get rich doing it.
No, they were.
Unless you've got access to, like, just ridiculous amount of free shit. I just had a heap of crap lying around. I thought I'd give it a go. I got fuck all out of it.
We had a few computers in the office die, and after I extracted the useful parts, I went back and chucked them in the dumpster, and I saw one of these guys go diving in the dumpster after them. And I said, what the hell are you doing? He goes, that's money in there. I'm getting that. I'm like,
yep.
Okay. So he gets the computer back out. I'm like, you know that thing's dead, right? He goes, oh, I don't care if it works. And that's what he told me what he was doing.
I know an old guy gets up every morning, walks along the side of the highway, picking up lead. The lead weights that get thrown off the truck wheels. Balancing your car.
Yeah, but lead doesn't have that much value.
You collect it every day for 6 months, take it down to the scrapyard. You're getting a payday, my friend.
Okay.
Lead's worth good money.
Is it?
I mean, it's not good copper. It's not copper or bronze, but it's good money for the weight.
I mean, I do occasionally see the joke of somebody saying, well, time to collect some lead, and they just show themselves with some pliers in a parking lot, but I always thought it was because they needed the lead for something, not because it was. I mean, when somebody rips your air conditioner off the back of the house, it's because they're stealing the copper out of it. So, okay.
Right, give me a sec, man.
I believe you. I just
44 cents a pound.
Well, as heavy as lead is, that's actually probably pretty good. So, while we're looking up the value of lead commodities, this next story is from Al Jazeera, but it was also on several others. This was just the first one I found. A cyber extortionist has demanded almost $10 million to stop leaking the medical records of Australians caught up in one of the country's worst cyber attacks. In a message posted to the dark web on early Thursday morning, the hacker said it was demanding $1 million from Medibank. Oh, wait, no, I read that wrong. Demanding $1 from Medibank, Australia's largest private health insurer, for each of the 9.7 million customers affected in an enormous data breach last month.
The 9.7 million to shut the fuck up.
Basically. Oh, Ari's got the prices here.
Yeah,
copper
prices.
Clean, 4 to 9 per kilogram. Copper mixed, 3 to 7. Insulated copper wire, 90 cents to $2 per kilogram. So I guess it's definitely worth stripping your copper wire before you take it in.
Yeah, I know electrician, they have a little bonfire every fortnight.
Just burn the insulation off of it? Yeah, that'd be a quick way to do it. Let's see. Aluminum, 25 cents to $1 per kilogram. Can, 75 cents per kilogram. Oh yeah, cans are effectively plastic for his, you know, like the couple of layers on them.
Yeah.
Car radiator copper is $1 to $2.50. Radiator aluminum, $1 to $2. Lead, 50 cents to $1.50 for a kilogram. Okay. Well, I stand
corrected. You can make a decent living picking up lead off the highways.
Oh, I wonder why it's so much cheaper in your country than mine.
Don't know. It's per kilo, Madman. Kilo's yeah. Heavy.
A kilo is 2.5 pounds. So it's, okay. You get twice as much for recycling lead in the States as you do for lead in Australia.
Bullets. You manufacture a lot of bullets.
Okay, that could be it.
Hired a man,
that's the only thing I can think of, man. That would be different is because they use a lot of bullets. Like, what's brass going? Is that the same comparative pricing?
Brass? I don't know. Madman, do you have price on brass?
Oh, no, I just looked up lead because that's what we were talking about. Okay. I didn't go through all the metals.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. We probably do manufacture a lot more bullets in other countries. I mean, we're American. Guns are part of our religion. So, let's see. The cyber criminal or criminal organization also posted information purporting to link clients to their abortions after earlier this week releasing a naughty list appearing to show customers who receive treatments for addiction, mental health issues, and HIV. Local media have linked the dark web forum used to post the hacked data to the crime group R-Evil, which Russian authorities said they shut down earlier this year at the request of the United States. Medibank CEO David Koskar, that looks like... His last name looks like a misspelling of cockhead for some reason. I don't know, maybe it's just me. On Thursday, condemned the hackers' actions as disgraceful while reiterating an apology to customers. You've called them bad people. What are you actually doing to solve the problem? Insults don't help. Quote, we remain committed and fully transparently communicating with customers. We will be contacting customers whose data has been released on the dark web, cockhead said. Quote, the weaponization of people's private information in an effort to extort payment is malicious. And it's an attack on the most vulnerable members of our community. I mean, way to go, Captain Obvious. Of course it's malicious. He's trying to extort you. What the fuck? He's just like, this is very, very bad. Yes. Yes, it is. You've just found a fancy way of saying this is bad. What do you think the term cyber criminal means?
And I would like to point out, they're not extorting the most vulnerable people in your society.
They're extorting you.
They're extorting a hospital.
No, it's, they don't actually run hospitals. They just run the private insurance.
Either way, they're extorting a multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're abusing not the, vulnerable people to do it, but... But, yeah, they're not extorting them. Sorry, Madman, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was pretty much it. I was just pointing out the victims were extorted by both companies.
Medibank has refused to pay the ransom, citing advice from cybercrime experts that doing so would not ensure the return of customers' information and could put, quote, more people in harm's way by making Australia a bigger target, unquote. There's some truth to that. I mean, you know, professionally, it's generally not advisable to pay the ransom. It's even better to encrypt your data at rest, so if somebody steals it, you know, they don't get it in a useful form right away, but that's hard and costs money, so people rarely do it. Australia Federal Police, which is investigating the cyber attack, has warned that downloading or even just accessing the data could be a criminal offense. Home Minister Affairs Claire O'Neill has described the hackers as scummy criminals. Again, with this obvious, guys, insulting them doesn't help. What are you doing other than, literally, they're just, it's like, they're names. We're calling them names. It's like, great, what are you doing?
Because they think that has some sort of fucking power.
Well, they're wrong.
Oh, they're possibly racist, too. Possibly homophobic. Yeah. Those guys are bad.
Your feedback is appreciated. Now give us our $10 million. Or whatever it was.
Yeah. I have my suspicions.
Quote, I cannot articulate the disgust I have for the scumbags who are at the heart of this criminal act, unquote, O'Neill told Parliament on Wednesday. The cyber attack, which first came to light last month, is the latest in a series of large data breaches to rock Australia.
No, nobody was rocked.
Mildly annoyed might be the correct answer.
Well, the Optus hack.
Well, that's what the next line says.
The National Bank hack. It's been a year of it, and I have my opinions.
National Bank. I wonder if they were able to actually exfiltrate any money. That would be cool. Like, we're not going to blackmail you. We're just going to go cash this check.
No, they just encrypted everything, Madman. I mean,
besides, if you're going to steal money from a bank, you don't just hack into the bank and take it out of their systems. You hack into some wimpy little third-party bank and make use of their wires transfer system. That's if you want to, you know. Bank hacking 101. you hack their wire transfers. You don't hack their records or databases. Or if you're going to do that, it's just a stomp on them to cover up what you were doing. So, and you know, I know I'm not supposed to give the advice to the bad guys, but for fuck's sake, guys. I mean, that one's pretty obvious. But, you know, RU's theory that somebody's... Would you call it a false flag? Was that where you were going with it?
Let's just call it a nudge in the direction they want to move the country.
Mm.
You know, that's my grand conspiracy theory on it.
Next article is from Torrent Freak. Court upholds piracy blocking order against Cloudflare's DNS resolver. I don't like this one. The Court of Rome has confirmed that Cloudflare must block three torrent sites through its public 1111 DNS resolver. The blockade was requested by several major record labels and arrives after Italy's telecoms regulator ordered local ISPs to block the sites. Cloudflare is not pleased with the order and previously noted that such broad measures set a dangerous precedent, and I agree. Website blocking has become an increasingly common anti-piracy tool around the globe. Dozens of countries, ISPs, in dozens of countries, ISPs have been ordered by courts to block pirate sites, usually on copyright grounds. More recently, neutral DNS providers have been targeted as well. Earlier this year, an Italian court ordered Cloudflare to block three torrent sites on its public 1111 DNS resolver. The order applies to kickasstorrents.to, limetorrents.pro, and elcorsonero.pro. Three domains that are already blocked by ISPs in Italy following an order from local regulator AGCOM. Disappointed by the ruling, Cloudflare filed an appeal in the court of Milan. The internet infrastructure company doesn't object to blocking requests at its target's websites or that its customers' websites. Let me try this again. The internet infrastructure company doesn't object to blocking requests that target its customers' websites, but believes that interfering with the DNS resolver is problematic, as those measures are not easy to restrict geographically. Quote, because such a block would apply globally to all users of the resolver, regardless of where they're located, it would affect end users outside of the blocking government's jurisdiction. Unquote, Cloudflare recently said. We therefore evaluate any government requests or court orders to block content through a globally available public recursive resolver as requests or orders to block content globally. At the Court of Appeal, Cloudflare argued that DNS blocking is an ineffective measure that can be easily bypassed with a VPN, for example. In addition, it contested that it's even subject to the jurisdiction of an Italian court. Cloudflare's defenses failed to gain traction in court, and its appeal was dismissed. DNS blocking may not be a perfect solution, but that doesn't mean Cloudflare can't be compelled to intervene. The dismissal is a win for Sony Music, Warner Music, and Universal, the companies behind the complaint. It's also seen by a clear victory by Enzo Mazza, CEO of the Italian music industry group FIMI. So. Yeah, precedent. This is the first time that Cloudflare has been ordered to make pirate sites unavailable through its public DNS resolver 1111. This is an important expansion since many Italians switched to public DNS resolvers to bypass ISP blocking measures. With the court order, rights holders can remove the shortcut. While this type of order is new in Italy, a similar blocking injunction was requested in Germany last year, and a local court ordered DNS provider Quad9 to block a pirate site, but the decision is still under appeal. Cloudflare believes that these types of orders set a dangerous precedent. The company previously said it hadn't actually blocked content through the 1111 public DNS resolver and said it implemented an alternative remedy to comply with the Italian court order. Cloudflare did not respond to TorrentFreak's request for comment. But, I mean, this is bad because...
Yeah.
You're not, at this point, you're not saying ISPs, local providers, block these sites. And I'm not fond of that, but that one at least makes sense. You're saying globally these sites should not be available and saying to block them at the infrastructure level. You know, these domain names cannot be used, and we're ordering the DNS providers to block them. And, I, you know, Cloudflare's got a point that they may not even be subject to the Italian jurisdiction in this case. And, of course, the Italian court is going to say, yes, we do. You know, no, we have the power to tell you what to do. They're going to say that. And surprising nobody, they're claiming jurisdiction, right? But this sets a really bad example because, okay, they're blocking websites today for copyright violations. The next step is to block websites for speech they don't like. And we've seen this play out before.
Yeah.
It starts with really illegal stuff. The kinds of porn we don't like to acknowledge exist. Then it becomes copyright. Then it becomes speech. You know, I mean, at what point does the internet stop being an open platform and start basically being cable TV?
That ended ages ago, whoops. The average normie doesn't go outside the roped off fucking parts of the internet that they see.
Well, that explains why everybody cares so much about Twitter. It's like,
well, it was in the roped off section. Now it's on the outside of it, and people can't fucking handle that. Because God forbid you see the slightest little fucking criticism, you know, just done.
So with Cloudflare blocking it at the DNS level, does that mean people in Spain aren't able to get to it, or is it just affecting Italy?
If they were to do what the court asked them to do, anyone using Cloudflare's DNS would not be able to resolve those domain names. Now, that said, if you knew the IP addresses for the websites, you could punch the IP address directly into the browser. This creates some other problems, mainly in the SSL verification. You could also make your own hosts file and have the addresses stored in your local machine. You could run your own DNS server outside of the Cloudflare infrastructure, and it would likely still work.
For Cloudflare to comply and not screw over their other customers, they would have to have separate infrastructure for Italy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And whereas you can do geo load balancing with IP addresses, it's not an easy proposition. It can be done, but you have to basically get everyone else to agree to that those IPs are geo-fenced, basically. That okay, if I request, you know, quadruple ones from the United States, I get one set of servers. If I request it from Italy, I get a completely different set of servers. And again, there are IPs like this. In fact, a lot of the root domain servers, the old joke was there's only 8 root DNS servers, but there's thousands of them, but there's 8 root IP addresses for DNS. The Italy courts, Italian courts think that Cloudflare controls one of the roots, and I don't think they do. I think they're just providing a DNS service. I don't think they actually control the root DNS system. The ICANN domains. Really, if they wanted to globally block these things, they'd have to go to ICANN. And I wonder if the reason they went to Cloudflare instead is because that they knew they'd have no chance of winning against ICANN.
Yeah, probably try the easiest one first and then work their way up.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's a bad idea because it's essentially the courts fucking with the infrastructure of the internet. and it's going to get abused. And, you know, if you can go to an Italian court instead of a United States court, well, the next thing you're going to see is court shopping. Well, let's go find a
which
country.
Which country will strike it down?
Mm-hmm.
And New Zealand will be the home of it.
So, well, so long as the rulings apply to just that country, because that's literally the only country they only citizens they have jurisdiction over.
It's not set up that way. No, it's, man. That's the problem.
Yeah. You can see the play they're making from here. This is just testing the water. That's
it
what
would just
is.
Force ICANN to either segment and have here's our Italian infrastructure, or they'll just need to pull out of the Italian market.
See, this is the problem. Fucking people think it's a level playing field. It's not. It's got crevasses and fucking mines all over it. This is just a water test to see whether they can get Cloudflare to comply. If Cloudflare complies, they move to the next thing. Then they move to the next one. Then they go to the next one. As Morb said, they're just going to start court shopping if this can be done. They'll go jurisdiction, seeing how far they can push it.
Well,
eventually, the internet will become such a small pond, there'll be like five or six players left. It'll be like TV because everything else is being blocked.
Well, okay. As an example, I run my own DNS server for my home network. It's a little box next to my router. It's not a Raspberry Pi.
I don't want to fucking have to, Mort.
But that's the thing. Most people don't do that.
But I don't want to. Don't fucking make me do this.
That's my point. Most people don't want to. Most people don't want to deal with it. And I can't blame them. So, but like you were saying, oh, this is, you know, Twitter's inside the no, or it was in the normie fence, now it's not. You know, it's going to be, do you use the normie infrastructure or do you run your own?
Well, that's, there's a two-tier system.
That's what I'm worried about.
Well, maybe that's what they really want. Those who don't want to join or stay inside the fucking ropes are going to have their head cut off if they stick it up. They'll let us have our little fucking playpen for a while, but they won't let it happen forever.
I don't know, man.
Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe you get people to go outside again.
Well,
maybe they
that.
Put down the fucking phone. Okay. Like, if you're still using a phone by 2024, there's something fucking wrong with you. I'm fucking serious. You people need to put those things away.
It's a work tool. That's all it is.
I understand, man, but use it as a work tool.
They used to be fun, but now it's just a work tool.
I have told my wife next year that goes in a Faraday cage when it comes into the house. I'm not having a mobile phone in this house anymore. I'm not having an unconnected device that I can't fucking control. I'm not getting paranoid either. I've always been this paranoid. I'm just seeing what the phone technologies are doing, and I don't like it.
Well, let's continue then with other crazy bullshit. This next one is from aliarba.net. I probably said that wrong. The evolution of 3D printed weapons poses a, quote, serious threat, unquote, if policymaking does not catch up with how fast the technology is evolving, global policing body Interpol told Al Arabian English in a statement attributed to the General Secretariat. The pace of development in the 3D printing industry will likely impact the sophistication and production of these weapons, Interpol warned. Although the production of 3D printed weapons is currently limited to small arms and light weapons, it is expected that the capabilities of this technology and the quality of printing materials will evolve and lead to more powerful and sophisticated weapons. Quote, there are already some impressions of weapons of a military nature with appreciable fire potential. My God, who wrote this? The evolution of printing materials will impact the increasing sophistication and production of these weapons and the threat they represent, unquote. The Interpol spokesperson added. Experts are concerned about how fast 3D printing technology is evolving. Several countries, blah, blah. I'm not even reading the rest of this. They then
don't even bother. It's not worth it.
Because
I'm just sitting here going with a drill press and a fucking home lathe. I don't need a 3D printer. We've had this technology in our garages for years.
A milling machine is what you want.
Sorry.
The absolute gag of it is we've talked about this years ago, and yet you've still got Interpol screwing, you know, stirring this stuff up. It's the same articles. It's the exact same story we talked about 5 years ago, where they're they're referencing the Liberator. You know,
it's the ghost guns.
I printed one of those, by the way. One, the damn thing wouldn't even assemble well. I never even had the gumption to ever try to make it operate, put a pin in the thing, try to fire it, because it was the design.
It's a grenade.
The design
don't
of it was so, I threw it away. The design was so crap it wasn't even worth keeping. It broke when I was trying to assemble it.
I don't understand Americans printing guns. Go buy a fucking real gun. I mean, different kettle of fish if I was printing them. You know, which I'm not. I have no interest in 3D printers.
Well, they're also showing stuff from Are We Cool Yet and some of the other designs out there where you 3D print a body, then you take some parts from like an upgrade kit or a repair kit or just spare parts from actual firearms. Now,
you know what it is? Oops. This fucking idiot's got, I've got a deadline to write this an article. Why? Hang on. Let me check the Twitter to see if someone's committed a racism. Couldn't find anyone, you know, big enough name. Ghost guns. That was talked about 3 months. Oh, fucking right. Something like that. Because this is bullshit.
It's absolutely bullshit.
I would doubt he even spoke to an Interpol fucking agent.
I don't know, but I just think it's funny because...
Fuck that cunt. Who wrote that article?
I'd already closed it. You'd have to open it back up and see.
I've got it, man.
But...
I just wonder why they didn't get scared when milling machines became a thing. I mean, I know they're a bit more expensive, but I do know of people that have that equipment in their garage.
Well, a milling machine requires a little bit more skill to operate than a 3D printer. Now, that said...
If you went to a competent high school that had a good shop, right, you know
like
how
I
to
said,
use one.
They're hard to... there's not a lot of those, are you? I'm afraid to tell you.
The older ones, yes, but there are pretty much AutoCAD milling machines. You give it a program, and it makes it.
Yeah, I've seen them. You can buy them for $500 on Amazon, but they only cut aluminum.
You want to get the more expensive ones, then? I mean,
yeah, the $3,000.
Yeah, you're sinking a few thousand dollars into it, but for $3,000, you can make any firearm on the planet.
But they missed the point of the people trying to do the 3D printed firearms in the States. It's not, can I produce a ghost gun? It's, can I solve the engineering challenge of using an off-the-shelf 3D printer to produce the frame of a weapon that fires? They're not... It's not somebody who's going to go rob a bank. It's somebody trying to see if they can be... It's somebody trying to be fucking Scotty from Star Trek, not, you know, the guys from the Payday games.
Yeah.
You know, seriously, anybody, I'm dead serious. I can't think of anyone who's into 3D printed guns that would actually do anything with them that's dangerous, well, other than firing the 3D printed gun. Because, like robbing a bank or, you know, actually, like, committing a crime with them, except for one guy in Europe, because he was producing these guns in Europe to flout the laws, basically. And I think he got arrested. And I think he got shit beat out of him by the cops. You know, because he openly surrendered to them, and they then kicked his ass, if I remember the article correctly. But, most people, at least in the States, aren't doing it because they need a gun. Most of the videos I've seen of people doing the 3D printed guns in the background, you see their regular firearm collection. It's not a question of can I get a regular gun? It's can I solve an engineering challenge? That's it. That's all they're trying to do. Now, does that mean that there's a side effect that maybe some criminal organization who has somebody in it could 3D print guns that don't have... I mean, okay, fine, but they don't separate in the statistics ghost guns, as in 3D printed guns, from ghost guns, which is where somebody took a Dremel and filed off the serial number.
And it's cheaper and safer to buy the latter than the former.
So...
Okay, when you quote a fucking source, please put their name in the article.
As opposed to...
Don't just say an Interpol... Yeah. I'm looking at this sketchy bitch, man. I could borrow $8. Madman, I need to do something.
All right, I'm just looking at the clock. I'm going to nix that because it's kind of a no-duh anyways. Last article, Google is refunding 3 years of Stadia purchases starting this week. Google Stadia has been marked for death, and as part of the four-month shutdown process, Google has been promised full refunds for any purchased games or hardware from the moribund service. An updated FAQ for the Google support site now explains the process will work. Quote, we'll be offering refunds for all Stadia hardware purchases, controllers, Founders Editions, Premier Edition, Play, and Watch with the Google TV packages made through the Google Store. And software transactions, games, and add-on purchases through the Stadia Store. Stadia Pro subscriptions are not eligible for refund. However, you will be able to continue playing your games in Pro without further charges until the final wind-down date. So, yeah, Google is refunding anybody who bought games in Stadia. They're refunding it because they're deciding to not continue running the service. And you know what? Good on them if you're going to shut down the service, giving people their money back. It's the right way to do it.
The person that wrote the article there is responsible for such articles as, man gives stolen baby camel to girlfriend, gets arrested. Like, that's the level of fucking writing this person's been involved.
So, yeah, so you're saying I should have skipped that article because it was a poor source?
Yeah, it's not your fault, man. You didn't know.
No, I didn't. I just saw an article about the 3D printing thing, and I'm like, I can rant on this for 5 seconds.
Yeah, no, it's not your fault, dude. She's just a hack. The only reason I want to borrow $8, Madman, is she takes story requests.
I just pulled up the games in Stadia, and giving people a refund, cool. I think it would have been better if they figured out how to make it where you can continue playing your Stadia games.
Like,
because you could get Red Dead Redemption in Stadia.
Mm-hmm.
So if I bought it in Stadia, Red Dead Redemption is a standalone. Didn't I just be able to play it?
Just like give you a Steam key or something for it?
I was just thinking, giving me a copy of the game, because what would be cool if they figured out how to do that? That could be rolled over to any other service once they go out. Like, hey, Steam, it looks like you might be collapsing. Here's how we folded it up. Now you can make it where everyone on your service can possibly, I don't know, continue playing Borderlands 2 after you fold up.
I tell you, man, if Steam does go broke and refunds everyone their money, BSV is in for a fucking hell of a payout.
Can you imagine? I mean, we'd all be getting multi-$1,000 checks.
Yeah, some of us would. And I think the big bucks winner there would be BSV. And again, I think he'd be pissed as, though.
It's like, do you know how many of those I didn't finish?
Uh-huh.
Oh, they only refund the ones you don't have enough playtime in.
Oh,
that'd be something. All right, let's do Dojo and wrap up here. So what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is an interesting little tool that I saw linked on the NetSec subreddit. It's called Katana, and it's a web spider. I thought it was JavaScript. Oh, no, it's Go. It's written in Go. At least I think it's written in Go. Did I read that wrong? I no longer see. I thought I saw what it was written in, and now I'm not sure. Anyways, doesn't matter. Yeah, it is Go. It is Go. I'm tired. Kicking my ass at work lately. Believe me, I'm worn out.
Then I think the time change.
Yeah, time change.
Even if it's still springing back, it's yeah.
So I tell you what, if as much bullshit as Biden's done, if he ended daylight savings time so the clocks quit changing, greatest president ever. Katana is pretty early. It's a pretty new tool, but it's a web spider. But here's the really fun part. The input and output support Unix pipes. It takes standard in and gives standard out, as well as JSON. And, you know, it's a web crawler, right? You point it at a website and it goes to, and it just starts following links. It understands JavaScript. It'll parse it. You can give it some regexes to pre-fill out forms. You can even control the scope. But it takes standard in and standard out, which means you can hook it into other tools, which is why I think it's cool. Because you can then say, okay, I've got the output of another script that's discovered all the websites that, you know, are interested for whatever you're doing, and then you can feed them into this tool to go through and get the site maps. And a lot of times seeing those URLs that are directed all over the place will give you hints for other URLs to try on their website that might not be linked. You know, you see question mark page equals user, maybe try punching in their page equals admin, or, you know, other shit like that, you know? Stuff like that. Or POI equals, like, you know, the example was they were calling Tesla. So it's like, oh, POI equals solar roof. Well, maybe try changing POI to internal, or POI to backend or admin, just to see if you get anything. Fun stuff to try, especially if you're beating up a web application. So a lot of times seeing the map is useful too, just because if you have any knowledge of how websites are put together, just seeing that link map can often be quite helpful in figuring out how the thing works. Also, I guess if you want a legitimate use for it, let's say you're inheriting a project from, you know, an admin who died and had a heart attack, and now you've got to figure out, because they didn't document a damn thing, you know, how their code base works. So something like this might be useful. And, you know, you think I'm making a joke about that. You'd be surprised how many corporate projects these days are maintained by people who don't really have a clue how half of it works, because they've inherited it through, like, five chains of people. So nobody ever bothered to document a damned thing. Ask me how I know. Anyways, so it's a neat little tool. Pretty early. It's like version 001. But it looks like it's, you know, he's got working in, and again, it takes the standard in and out, so you can pipe to it with Linux commands. I think that's useful. But, of course, that's all we've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it, peer decking every Thursday. You know, I say that. We're not going to be doing peer decking every Thursday, because we're going to take a hiatus after the show for the rest of the year. We'll come back when we come back. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit, and the IRC. In the IRC tonight, CyberLard, Cycros, Madman, myself, Sardonyx, and the Soylent Bomb. Are you closing thoughts?
I didn't have any because I quickly turned the racing on before the show's over, so I'm sort of sitting here now watching cars go round and round. So I don't really have a thought.
All right, anymore. Well, I'm sorry I wasn't interesting enough for you, Madman. Closing thoughts.
Did they make all the correct left turns, or do we have some wrecks?
Dude, I am not watching sissy racing. Like, this is like real person racing. They're racing at Nuremberg.
Oh, so they take right turns.
Quiet, Madman.
Now that I'm done messing with RU, it scares me how much infrastructure and businesses are held together by duct tape, hope, and rainbow and unicorn tears.
And like one or two very much overworked admins who actually understand enough about the system to make it work, and just so many people bugging them constantly to keep it going. It is actually scary how many websites only work well because there's some poor admin in the background rebooting the thing and fixing the database and fixing the code because it crashes every 20 minutes, or figuring out that while the application is starting up, if it receives a web call, it's going to crash. So writing scripts to, you know, turn on and off firewall rules just to keep the website from dying. It is amazing that any of this shit works at all. But that's all I got. Sound effects time, I think.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.
Shut up, Wesley.